It is a beautiful day to be alive, and I'm so glad we have this time together. I'm Sunna Laybourne, she, her. I am a professor, scholar, connector, and avid reader. I've always loved learning about what's happening in our social world and sharing that knowledge, especially over a good cup of coffee. And so here we are. Each week on Let's Grab Coffee, I catch up with experts from around the world who are investigating our most pressing social issues and common curiosities. And today, I have a very special conversation to share with you. This week, a few hundred thousand people from around the world will convene in Austin, Texas for South by Southwest. This annual conference, film festival, and music festival provides unparalleled discovery, learning, professional development, and networking for creatives in tech, music, film, and beyond. This year, one of those panels will include myself and three other Memphians who are trailblazers in their respective media fields. Dominic Lawson, who you may remember for our February feature with his multi-award-winning podcast, Black is America. Chastity Jade, film editor, indie director, and owner of film editing company, Edit Bay Post. And Lita McCullough-Seletsky, a former guest of the show and author of The Kneeling Man, My Father's Life as a Black Spy Who Witnessed the Assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. In fact, we're in Austin right now. Last year, Memphis also represented on the South by Southwest stage with a panel I organized entitled Don't Lose Your Voice, Trying to Be Heard. The focus was maintaining your creative voice and creative vision when navigating mainstream media expectations and major industry bids on your work. The panel featured two Memphians, Manura Jones and Dominic Lawson, as well as Enora Nori Moss, and was moderated by Dr. Saida Grundy, sociology professor and author of Respectable, Politics and Paradigm in Making the Morehouse Man. And you might remember Dr. Grundy as a former guest of the show as well. Today, I'm sharing that panel discussion with you, and I'm certain you will learn just as much as the captive South by Southwest audience did. I'll let Dr. Saida Grundy take it from here.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. It is so good to be here. Thank you for being here this morning. I want to introduce our panelists today. Starting immediately next to me, Manira Sophia Jones is an NAACP Image Award winning nominated writer, filmmaker, and executive producer. She's the creator of Juntland, a viral animated web series about dating and relationships. Sincerely Camille, the first animated short form series for the OWN network. And The Mound, OWN's first animated series, currently in development, based on Memphis's Orange Mound, the first neighborhood in the history of America built for and by Black people. Dominic Lawson is an award-winning producer and entrepreneur. He serves as a podcast host, producer, and editor of Black is America, an African-American history podcast. He also serves in the same role at Meadows Behavioral Healthcare, creating content for the shows Beyond Theory and Recovery Replay. Nori is an award-winning multimedia personality and marketing consultant. She has expanded her media portfolio to include producing films such as Black Icarus, post-production, and The Art of Birth documentary, in production, featuring Mumu Fresh, a Grammy-nominated artist out of Baltimore, raised in D.C. Currently, she's an on-air personality with Audacy, a WPGC 95.5 broadcasting in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. So to start us off today, I want to ask you all about your insights and experiences across hopefully three scales: the personal, the industry, and if we have time, I want us to talk about the craft itself for our members of the audience. So I'm going to start us with the question of, when was the moment that you knew you could do this professionally? And what of your experience has been the single greatest challenge you've encountered thus far? We'll start here.
Well, I would say creatively, I feel like I've always had the juice. I've always had the talent. The discipline is something else. I never had the discipline. It took me going viral and networks coming to me to force me into this profession. And it was the best thing that could have happened to me. It's a double-edged sword, which we'll get into later, but I think the challenge still is my discipline, my consistency.
Good morning, everybody. I think for me, when I started podcasting in 2016, and was just growing the show and stuff like that. And then once I booked the co-founder of Netflix for The Startup Life, and being in the business community, you book Mark Randolph from Netflix, that says something. Mm-hmm. That's that fulcrum point, if you will. And so and start interviewing more people from there. And then when the Meadows was like, hey, we see what you're doing with The Startup Life. We want you to do that for us, and we'll pay you. And I was like, okay, you cutting checks out here for podcasting. All right, let's do it. So that's when I knew, okay, we're building something here. And it was just a really cool thing. But that's the moment I knew, like, yeah, we can be out here getting these podcast checks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes, for checks. For me, it was when I moved away from home, new city, no friends, and I was like, okay, we gonna ride this talent out and see if I got what it takes. And I secured my first full-time position in Baltimore. And then in communications itself, you know, it's like you get a call and they're like, okay, you're a micro social media influencer. You know, BET says, hey, can you put together some skits for social media? Then Google hits me and is like, hey, would you beta test some products? And I'm like, yes, once again, getting checks with what you're passionate about. But also, when you have companies seeking your talent, it's like, okay, we're on to something. Yeah. Like, this is something I can go full force in and maintain a living. And so I was excited about that.
And your challenges?
I would say one of the biggest challenge is being secure in who you are. One of the things we do is when there's a trend and it's catchy and it's popping, you're like, oh, well, maybe I should jump on that bandwagon. Mm-hmm. You don't, like, yeah. You literally can create your own trend and people will jump on your bandwagon. Yeah. So that was the biggest thing for me is to be like, okay, wait, this is what my audience enjoys. This is what I enjoy. And when you put out content that you're very confident in, then it's very natural. It's not hard. It's not like, oh, I got to do this work. It just flows.
So as we're talking about not losing our voices, you all at this point have navigated major networks, major platforms, studios, producers, contractors, et cetera. Can you tell us about a time where you had to put your foot down? Like, what was the hard no for you, and how did you feel about that and navigating that?
I feel like Hollywood is the land of no. It is like the state capital of hell no. So I've heard a lot of no's. I think specifically a situation that happened with me was I started pitching Juntland, my web series, as a full animated series. So I went to all the major networks, any of the major networks that you're thinking about right now, I went there, I pitched it. Everybody loved it. Everybody thought it was bold and irreverent and funny. Everybody said no because, you know, black people don't do animation. People won't get it. Animation is the white man's genre. I heard everything. I eventually got a yes from Netflix. They bought the show. And we went and wrote the pilot. They loved the pilot. And then there was a regime change at Netflix. Mm-hmm. And they completely obliterated the animation department. And there was a new mandate. And it was any new... And they axed, you know, shows that were in mid-production, three, four episodes in. Mm-hmm. And the new mandate was that any new animated series had to appeal to white men, which was... That was it. That was the mandate. They gave us the ages. They didn't say white men.
But you knew what they were saying.
But it was white. So it was a no. But I like to, this may sound cliche, but everything is so cyclical that eventually animation will come back around and it'll be the it thing. So it's really not looking at it as a no. It's like, it's literally just not right now. Yeah. Because of some of your favorite shows, people said no to them for 10, 15, 20 years. And then they eventually... Yeah. They eventually became your favorite show. Yeah. So that's kind of how I like to look at the no's.
Yeah.
Just not right now.
It actually, for me, came recently. So when I was doing one style of show and then switched to another style of show. And so the style of show I do now, which is Black is American Beyond Theory, is that NPR narrative storytelling format. And so when you talk about NPR in that style, is, you know, there's a lot of, like, I'm just going to say a little stiffness, if you will, right? Let's just call a spade a spade. It's a little stiffness. It's very formal. It's
very NPR's voice.
Oh, no, we do.
Past the hour.
Right, exactly. Right. And so I took that format, but I put my own seasoning on it, right? And so with that came a little bit of backlash, like this is not what this is for. This is, you know, they're not looking at the fact that it's a format. They're looking at it like, no, this is what you're supposed to do. And so people were commenting on maybe how I was enunciating things and stuff like that, you know. So, but it's like, that's how I talk. That's my culture, right? Like, it's almost like you're trying to strip that from me. And so, you know, it really came from the audience. And they was like, you know what? We like this. No, you speak to us. You share history the way we want to hear it. No, you do you. And so those were one of those things. I was like, now I'm going to put my foot down because the audience, which is, to me, the most important part of all of this, the audience was like, no, you keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, they caught on. Now you can hear Black Southern voices on NPR. I hear Aisha Roscoe, you know, Gene Demby.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I would say for me, when I started to enter into film festivals, it's like you're excited, you have this product, you put your heart and soul into this work, and you're so excited for the opportunity for the world to see it. And post the pandemic, it was just like, yeah, we're doing online premieres. And it's like, I don't want my film to be premiered online. I want people to experience it. I want to talk to people. I want to get your raw feedback in real time. In person. And so there were some film festivals that were like, yeah, we like your film. We'll feature it. And we said no, because we didn't want to do our world premiere online. And so that was hard, because it was some really great festivals. And I'm looking at the director, and he's looking at me as the producer, and he's like, so what are we going to do? And I'm like, we gonna stick with it. We gonna stick with the plan. And so that was difficult as a creative, wanting to get out this story that you've worked so hard on in the past year, and you've got it to this place of, okay, we want people to consume it and digest it, and, you know, let's go. But it was just a lot of people wanting to just premiere on, or festivals wanting to premiere online, and we said no. And so we're still in the circuit right now, but we're getting great feedback, and so we're gonna keep going until we get what we want.
So since we've talked about, you know, the when you had to put your foot down, and it sounds like for some of you understood that that was a just right now, foot down, et cetera, can you tell us about a time when you had to navigate compromises? And this can include compromises you regret, but how do you do compromising and also managing your integrity in that?
I feel like as a writer, it is constant compromise. I was accustomed to just writing by myself before I, you know, stepped into this other world. But when you're co-writing, it is a personal struggle of mine, because I'm so specific in how I create my world and how I build characters. To have another person there to say, maybe not that way, but maybe we'll go in this direction, is humbling, and it is a real struggle. Also, notes from producers is... Oh. My God, I hate it. But I also have to realize that I may have some blind spots. So that's how I kind of like to look at it, that compromise.
Very similar, because there was an episode I did for The Meadows on Beyond Theory. It was our season finale, and we focused on racialized trauma in Black America. And so this was right around the time Tyre Nichols in Memphis. And I shared a clip of a pastor sharing his frustration with, you know, why only the 5 Black officers were being, you know, arrested and nobody else was. And so I got one of those producer notes, right? And she was saying, you know, Dominic, remember the audience that Beyond Theory is for? And, you know, and that most of them are white, and they may feel a little threatened by that. And so the only thing I did was, like, I shortened the clip, but I didn't get rid of the clip. You know what I mean? Because the thing is, what we know in the Black community is that the Black church has been a refuge, right? And so I wanted to share that experience and that frustration in that piece, because it was important for all of America to understand, like, we've been saying these things for a long time, and that audience for Beyond Theory hadn't heard that before. And so I had to put my foot down on that. Like, no, this has to stay. I'll shorten the clip so it doesn't feel so bad, but this has to stay.
Yeah. So I would say it was before Black Lives Matter was a movement and it was just a hashtag. And I remember going on, this is, I'm a radio personality, so I go on a radio and I talk about just the importance of making sure that we're protecting each other and we are, you know, really standing in our own and owning our space of we deserve to be here, we deserve to have this wonderful life, this American dream is ours too. And I remember I was also doing traffic. And I go on this rant, I record my traffic break, and then at the very end, I'm still talking about Black Lives Matter. And this goes on to other stations that's not just the hip-hop station. The owner comes busting through the door, and he's like, what are you talking about? And I was like, black folks, black lives.
Intersections and congestion.
And so it was a moment where I was like, oh, you about to lose your job. Yeah, they about to fire you. Because, you know, again, you know, the Ricky Smiley Morning Show is on and they're going in and I'm going in. And so it's this local aspect, it's this syndicated aspect, and it's all intersecting. And in getting caught up, I was like, okay, but you have to also speak to other stations, other genres that, you know, are not privy yet to really what's happening. Yeah, other stations are like, Black Lives Matter, what's that? Because again, it's just a hashtag at this point. And if you're, if honestly, if you're not really paying attention to what's happening mainstream, or, you know, some people are under rocks. Let's just keep it what it is. If you're not paying attention, then you are thrown off. Just like the traffic with Black Lives Matter. So, again, I think for me, it was understanding it's a time and place for everything, but also, like, do your job, right? Yeah. I'm going to stand on it. I'm going to stand by what I'm saying, and I meant what I said because I said it. But also, like, wait a minute, sis. Slow down. You're moving too fast.
Yeah. So with that, switching gears to talking a little bit about the industry itself, what is your view of where black content creation is headed and changes you'd like to see or even precautions to be aware of in terms of how the industry is treating black content?
I think black creatives are always at the forefront of innovative works. Like we set the trends. I think that with social media and streaming, it's a lot easier to get whatever you want out there. Mm-hmm. I think we haven't seen the full breadth of our genius because of gatekeeping, honestly.
Absolutely.
But I think we're seeing more of it for those reasons, streaming, social media, and with works from people like Jordan Peele and Donald Glover. I would love to see more animation, or any animation, you know, in the black space. I would love to get away from this idea that it's just for white men, because it's not. That is why I'm literally on this stage, is because Negroes were watching my animation.
It's
so,
global, white men are not the best at it.
Exactly.
Asians
so, I would love to see us in an animated, world.
To add on to what Manira was talking about, I interviewed somebody for Black is America, and she said that one thing about black folks is that we have a cheat code. And it's a cheat code that not everybody has. And so while there are these barriers and these adversarial moments, for some reason it still rises to the top. It still finds its way out there. And so with that being said, yes, there are the gatekeepers, like Manira was saying, but I just want us to know that, like, you can create what you want to create, be authentically you, and still get this money. Yeah. Like, there's still a bag out here for you. It may take a little bit longer. And yes, those gatekeepers are challenging. Like, I hate that it's there. Like, we're on this stage, but we're still facing those gatekeepers. But I would just say that, like, keep making your content, keep making what you like to do.
So I think what's important is we have to monetize. There are subscriptions. There are so many ways that we can capitalize off of our content that we just miss the boat a lot of times. And so whether you are a micro influencer, you have hundreds of thousands of followers, wherever you fall in that spectrum, your content is important and you have an audience. And so I think when we think in, okay, how can we make sure that we're moving the needle, we're pushing the envelope, but we're also, once again, figuring out we're the trendsetters. We are the ones that are the way makers. We really do kind of push forward what's next. Mm-hmm. If you want to know what's next, go to the hood. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, go to a neighborhood that is underserved, and you're going to find people that are making a way out of no way. I love when I see the videos on social media of the kids in Africa, and they're reenacting these major Hollywood production films in their backyard, and it's the imagination of it all, and it is the, we're going to make this happen no matter what, and I think you find a way. A lot of times when you don't have the resources, you create your own space and your own lane. And that's what we've been doing for a lot of times. But we need to monetize that and get those subscriptions. Yeah. And I think that's really going to push us to do better. And I also say this, Fanbase is a platform that is Black-owned. Yeah. It is minority-owned. Right. And it is a wonderful way to monetize your content. I always push that because Isaac Hayes, he's a thought leader. Mm-hmm. And he's like, listen, if we're making money and we're, you know, you have a million followers and you're not able to reach all of those people because they want you to monetize your content, they want you to buy ads, advertising. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it's not reaching all of the people that it could. But we have to use platforms that are not necessarily as popular, but you're going to get the most out of that platform.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, with that, you know, I want to, for our audience to understand, and any of you can take this, what makes it Black content? Is it that it's created by a Black person, which I do not think that necessarily makes it Black content? Is it that an audience is in mind? I mean, we have seen Black content that I don't consider anti-racist at all, right? Mm-hmm. That there's plenty of Black content that treads in stereotypes about Black people, much to our demise. What makes it Black content for you?
I think when it just speaks to me culturally, for example, The Color Purple, it was written by Alice Walker, but it was directed by Steven Spielberg. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have told me that white Jewish guy directed The Color Purple because it probably speaks to every Black person in this and maybe white as well. So I think if it just speaks to me, if I can recognize, if I can see my aunt, my uncle, my brother, like whoever, to me, that's what makes it Black AF.
Yeah.
So. I think just to add to that and to kind of Nori's point, who owns it? Because that's a big piece because like for years and years and hundreds of years, like our talent, our creativity has been monetized by people who don't look like us.
Absolutely.
So and that's a problem. And so just to add to that, that's a big piece of it too.
Black content, I do think it is the creator of the content. I think I definitely agree with Manera. Is how does it resonate? Do I see myself in this content? But I think also, like, the baseline. Where does it come from? What is the essence of what it is that's viral? Or, you know, like, because I think a lot of times, I mean, we can even go to TikTok with the dances, right?
Yeah.
Child. Listen, you have people that are getting reality shows off of TikTok dances that they stole, that they just happen to be scrolling and mimic every move, and now they're getting shows. So let's keep it a book. I think Black content is created by Black folks. I think Black content is mimic. It's the voice that we use that goes viral. Like, it's Black. You know a Black person when you hear them.
Yeah.
Like, you know. And you also know, again, if it's from your culture, if it's not from your culture, if it's something that you're borrowing, stealing, plagiarizing, like, you know if it's yours or not.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like the FUBU principle, the for us, by us.
Exactly.
So we've talked about, you know, not losing your voice. I want to ask you also about not losing your audience, right? Because I think in what we're hearing, that this connection you have as a content creator, making things that you want to reach specific audiences. One, I want to tell you, who do you have in mind when you're creating? I mean, clearly you've been pushed to, you know, make stories for, you know, oftentimes I think all Black creatives are asked to make universal stories, which means to take the Blackness out of them, which I love Toni Morrison's response of, I never asked Tolstoy to write for me, right? Mm-hmm. I never asked James Joyce to write for me, right? How do you keep in mind the audience that you want to be reached, and like, who is that for you?
I try not to keep anybody in mind. Honestly, if I do that, then, I tend to create from a place of what will make me cackle, what you know, what kind of worlds am I drawn to? What kind of characters would I be rooting for? And then I go from there, because that's what they want. They want something from your heart, from your mind, that may or may not directly resonate with them, like Harry Potter.
I love Harry Potter.
I don't know anything about magic, but I know like the human the human condition that he faced. So I try not to think about an audience, to be completely honest. Sometimes you're forced into those parameters, and you just have to do the best that you can. But honestly, create from what you want, what you would want to see on the screen is my biggest piece of advice.
I create for what I'm seeking. Because with Black as America, for the longest time, when you hear the story of America, I mean, it's cliche, but you rarely hear us. And when you do hear us, it's the Holy Trinity of Black history. Martin Luther King, Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman. Like, that's the Trinity, right? And so, and while those stories are important to tell, let me be clear about that. Those stories are important to tell. But I want, where's the hero? Where's the person who came through and saved the day? I want somebody who looks like me to tell that story. That's why when we started Black as America, we started with John Fox, the Army veteran who called military fire on himself to save the day. Wow. Like, who's balls enough to do that, right? And so that's somebody who looks like me. And so being a military veteran myself, I'm creating for that person who's seeking that affirmation, who's seeking that, you know what? I can be a race car driver. I can be a military hero. I can be a fashion designer. Like, I want to create those stories. And so people have resonated with that. So I'm creating for what I'm seeking.
Yeah, absolutely.
I create for me. And when I say me, it is really what I've grown up wanting to see, what I've grown up wanting to be, others that have been great role models. So when I create content, Nori, do you want to listen to this? Would you listen to yourself talk for an hour? Would you listen to yourself talk about this subject matter for an hour? Mm-hmm. Would you be comfortable with this information going viral? Because it's the moments where you're like, this is just for me, and it goes viral. And next thing you know, you're like, oh my gosh. Okay, so everybody's talking about this in a way that I didn't imagine it could blow up. So I do. I think about Nori from Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the South, my Southern experiences, my lens, and now being on the East Coast, and that's a whole different experience within itself. I'm like, oh yeah, we definitely think different. We definitely moving different. So those transitions in my life that I've experienced, and you know, how do I want to receive that information? That's how I think about my audience. It's me.
Yeah, absolutely. So in that, you know, I've heard you all say, you know, a number of your experiences that I would describe as keeping your authenticity in what you're doing, you know, with the challenges of navigating that. Can you tell us about what you see as the connection between your authenticity as a Black voice and your authority as a Black voice? Because you all are actually experts in what you do, right? You all are, you know, heavily researching things, you're prepping. So what is it about, you know, in that sort of relationship with an industry, what do they need to understand about how your audiences hear you as an authority on these issues?
So it's funny because I'm a communications girl. Like, I'm a radio girl. So I think in quick, concise thoughts. I think in, you know, how do I want to get this information out in a way that is going to be very digestible very quickly, because it's a micro society, right? No, don't people, unless you are enthralled and you are dedicated, like you're taking it in small doses. And so one of the things I think is important is understanding that the industry is ever changing, and so you have to evolve and be willing to be water and be fluid and mold and shift a little bit. And I think that's what's really been important for me.
For me, it's the exact opposite, because I'm, as a nonfiction narrative podcaster, I go on the long journey. I go on that path, if you will, and that's what's resonating with my audience. You know, we just recently saw Edison Research that said that more Black people listen to history podcasts if it's a person who looks like them telling these stories, because they can identify with them. And so I love to take you on a journey, put you in the Tower of John Fox, put you in the race car of Wendell Scott. And that's how I pull it off.
One thing I've learned in dealing with Hollywood is that executives are stupid. They really don't know anything. So if you tell them exactly what you want and what it's going to be, my experience, it's kind of worked out. Just have that conviction. Know exactly what you want. Practice it, pitch it over and over and over again so they can't knock you off of your lane because they will try. They will try to do whatever they can to get what they want, what they think the audience wants, when honestly the audience wants you. They need you. So,
you know, there is a lot of kind of social responsibility that I think a lot of marginalized content creators feel in terms of, like, even, you know, protecting stories about our communities, telling whole stories, trying to humanize people in our communities. Because, you know, as you know, we've discussed, there is a history in our country of consuming Black people purely as entertainment, especially minstrelsy, right? And there was a time in America in the 20th century when the dominant form of entertainment was minstrelsy. If you said you were going to a theater, it was white people consuming the humiliation, degradation, and mocking of Black people, right? This was the form of entertainment. All your grandparents did it. All right? So with that, how do you actually protect Black stories? Like, what sort of responsibility do you all feel in your work to humanize the voices of people you're talking about, to present characters that are rounded, to present stories, you know, historically, that are nuanced and rounded? What is that like?
First of all, it's the utmost responsibility.
Yeah.
And so what we do is, like, in podcasting, and especially with a lot of history podcasts that I just loathe, they present these facts and these figures. And, like, this is the date, this is when it happened, X, Y, Z. But when I'm telling you a story, I'm telling you about some of the people who are focusing on favorite hobbies. I'm focusing on their kids, what their aspirations were, those philosophies. So that way, by the time of the end of the story, you're invested. When you hear the end of the story of a Henry Johnson, you've learned about, you know, him growing up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And so when he passes away because, you know, the United States government didn't treat him right because they didn't give him his severance packages and stuff like that, you're angry. You're angry, and you feel some type of way, like, this man did all this stuff and this, you know. So you humanize them by make sure you're telling those little side stories. You go on those side missions and humanize the Black experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would say making sure that you remain vigilant in your vision, knowing exactly when to say no. Because there are going to be instances where you have to say no, where you'll have to walk away because your vision is turning into something that you don't recognize anymore.
Yeah.
And you don't want to go down that path.
We've seen that happen.
Yeah, time and time again. Yes.
Yeah.
And you've seen the ones who've stayed.
Yeah.
And,
right, yeah.
Sometimes it's become more lucrative for them, but at what cost?
And
So it's really just about, like I said, remaining vigilant about what you know you want to create.
Mm-hmm. And often they stayed and their audience has left, right?
Exactly.
Black audiences will leave you once they feel as though you are no longer authentic to Black people.
That's true.
When it comes to, you know, again, navigating your path, navigating your voice in this, how have you ensured that you're not being pigeonholed as a Black creator? Because I think this is particularly something that happens to marginalized creators, right? That there's an idea of, oh, we expect this sort of, you know, if you're a Black man doing sports, great. We expect that from Black men, right? How do you not get pigeonholed in your lanes?
I don't know that I can prevent that, honestly. Mm-hmm. All I can do is what I can do, and I can do a lot. I go back to, like, social media and streaming platforms. I think there's a lot more room to do whatever you want and to put it out there. You look at Tubi, which is the hood creator's paradise. Like, there is no excuse not to make exactly what you want and get it out there. I think more so, like, the onus is on the audience or the consumers not to pigeonhole us, because we're not standing in the pigeonhole line waiting to jump in. Like, y'all are pushing and kicking. You know, give artists the time to grow, to do different things. I can remember when the TLC movie came out and they announced that Lil Mama was going to be playing Left Eye.
But she was great at that role.
Atlanta was in an uproar. Black Twitter was aghast because they still had her in that hole of the damn fool who went on stage and was singing with Jay-Z and Alicia Keys.
But that is who Left Eye is.
What did she do? What did she do? What did Lil Mama do? She killed it. So
she killed it. She did.
I think it's the audience. I think it's more so on the audience and the consumers to, you know, chill out. Yeah. Let us do what we do. We got IP for days. So let's do it.
What I will say, to add to that, not antithetically, but to add to that, is when the audience does give you that grace, take the grace and try the new things. Because I think sometimes we do get pigeonholed in those moments like, well, this is what they like. Yeah. This is what I got to go with. I know for us, one of the things that was important to me was to create history content, award-winning history content, and award-winning mental health content so you can see that the kid got range, right? You know, and so when we switched up to that narrative style, and because I know there's a lot of podcasts out there, you know, there's a lot, we got, you know, it's the photocopy of a Kevin Samuels doctrine, it's the photocopy of a Breakfast Club doctrine, and so it's like, so there's not many creatives who look like me out here, like, I want to talk about recovery and drug addiction and stuff like
and
that.
Pop culture.
Exactly, right? And so when we was able to get awards for both, you know, at the same time, it was like winning, you know, a Grammy with, you know, in hip hop and a Grammy in country. Like that's what, like, so I think as creatives, it's important to, while the audience does give you that grace, take the grace, take those chances, try some new stuff. And hey, as they say, you know, switch your style up, watch the money pile up.
So for me, it's funny because you'll see me talking hip hop, you'll see me talking urban AC, you'll see me talking infrastructure and President Biden putting money into roads. So all of these things are really important to me. So for me, it was being diverse and being able to pivot. Sometimes entertainment has a slow season and it's not popping and nothing's really happening that speaks to me. Yeah. So it's like, okay, listen, I have these degrees, I have this information in my mind. How can we make something that's not sexy, sexy? Infrastructure. So that's really what I went into, and that was my pivot. So you'll see me producing content with the District Department of Transportation. And so that wasn't happening before. And so now it's just like, content is not just this one thing or this monolithic thing, or you're not going to put me in a box of like, she just likes to talk about music. No, I like to talk about so many different things, and I'm passionate about so many different things and how we can just improve ourselves as a whole. And so, yeah, I pivoted for a while. I moved into the infrastructure space, creating content that wasn't my norm. I was out of my comfort zone, and I had to get uncomfortable for a little while so that I could really figure out how can I maneuver when the roller coaster of life happens, because life is lifing a lot of us. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, I need another chick. That's what I did. And I think that's important.
Please, go ahead.
Just to add to that, you know, because when I was doing business and entrepreneurship in the Meadows Call, they was like, we just see you as a podcaster.
Yeah.
Not a business podcaster, not a whatever podcast. You're a podcaster, which means that, like, you know, you don't have to add that extraness, if you will.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, I guess I was talking too much. I think, you know, from a podcast perspective, we just remember you are a podcaster, which means you can talk about different things. So don't pigeonhole yourself in that regard. So
we have some time left. I definitely want to open it up to our audience. I see we have a mic here in our center aisle for any of you all who want to ask questions of our panel. Oh, here we go. Hi, dear.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Dan. I'm a marketing professional out of Houston, Texas.
Hi, Dan.
And H-Town. My question is about a North Star. So when you were starting out, who did you want to mirror? Who's your icon?
What a great question. Who did you all sort of emulate? Who did you want to mirror? Who did you want to walk in sort of their path?
Well, Spielberg was like my North Star.
Yeah.
But I also, like,
you're a Pixar.
Right. I literally wanted to be like a rock star. I wanted to, like, Sade, and I wanted to go into the music world. I don't know how I wanted to do it, but I started doing music videos. So Hype Williams and people like that were kind of, I was all over the place, to be honest, which I think is a good thing to be. Be diverse and just do whatever.
Yeah, black music is animated, so
For me, it was Stuart Scott, the great sportscaster from the 90s. When I was a kid waking up for school, and you know, he would come, you know, talk about cool as the other side of the pillow and stuff like that, right?
Stuart,
and so it was an era where, you know, first of all, there wasn't many black sportscasters, and they definitely weren't talking like that. Yeah. And so, like, what I do now is, like, I try to keep that in mind, to, like, be as authentic as Stuart Scott. And so that was a big North Star for me.
Absolutely.
It's funny. For me, it was local people in my community, like a Andrea Perry, like a Donna L that's sitting in the room. Yeah. Like, those were the people, EJ and Eric on the radio in the morning. Like, radio was everything for me growing up. So locally, it was just a lot of influence of people that looked like me, that were doing great things in the community, and that were telling stories in a way that I could receive them. And then it goes on to expand in film and things of that nature, but just a lot of local people who are just the bomb.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Thank you, Dan.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. Gosh, I'm a very short person. So my name is Jennifer Thurston. I'm also a veteran, so thank you for your service much. And I have a home in Santa Monica, but I decided I wanted to go and get my MFA in film and media art in D.C.
Okay.
So that's where I am at American University right now, finishing that up, because I wanted to be an influencer and be around influencers, and that's exactly what's happening. So, but my question, well, funny antidote. So I took a social media marketing class because it's really important. Everyone else was in their 20s. And the professor was going through who uses Facebook, who uses LinkedIn. I was the only one that raised my hand. He said, who uses IG? I'm like, what does the IG have to do with any of this? Yeah. So I'm just wondering, with us being in this space and it's just me, how do we stay in the moment but still put the content? Because it was this social media class was great, how we can manage our, but there's still time involved, and we have to take pictures and video and post it.
Yeah.
But I want to be in the moment, and then I want to get a couple hours sleep, maybe. <Yeah.
laughs> That is my biggest struggle, is social media content. I have such an aversion to it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's so strange, because that's how I ended up here. But I think having a plan.
Yeah.
You have to plan. You have to plan. You have to create, and then you just have to post. Maybe don't do everything in the moment, mm-hmm. because you want to also live mm-hmm. in the moment. Mm-hmm. You want to experience things mm-hmm. as a real human.
Yeah.
So make a plan. Make a schedule. Go out. Know exactly what you want to create, what you want to shoot, when you want to post it, and then post it.
Yeah.
That would be my advice.
Yeah.
I don't like social media. Like, I'm
sorry.
It's because the thing is just like, it is what it is. You know, the type of stuff that's on there, whatever. However, for me, if that's your thing and you have an aversion to social media, go to organizations and platforms who already have a pre-installed social media following. Partner with them, something that's similar to what you're doing. Partner with them and say, hey, you know, let me license some content for you. That way you still own the IP, but you're still getting your stuff out there, and they still know you created it, right? So it's not a big deal. So it's almost like you can kind of circumvent this whole, I got to build up my social media following. I got more following than followers. And like, it just becomes a whole thing. Because for me, I'm so focused on trying to make sure the quality of the primary content is high, that if I start diluting into other stuff, the primary content's gonna go down.
Can we take the next question? Maybe you want to answer this one. Hello, dear. How are you?
Maybe you do want to answer this one.
How are you doing, darling?
I'm doing well, thank you. As storytellers, so often the stories we want to tell are in search of advocacy or trying to make change, and often the audience we need to reach to make that change is not the audience that wants to hear those stories.
Yeah.
How do we bridge that gap and tell the stories that matter to the people that need to hear them rather than preaching to the choir?
Ain't that the truth?
When you find out, you let me know, because I have no idea.
You're right. Yeah.
It's a hard one.
I mean, who needs to hear that black people are human and nuanced, and that like black people can be gender nonconforming, and black people can be, you know, poor and dignified? Like, who needs to hear that? It's not black people.
Right.
We know that. Right?
There has to be a willingness to be open.
Yeah.
They have to seek, unfortunately. I always say that, like, it's not on us to educate people all the time on all the things. You have to want to know it. You have to want to learn it. So I don't have the answer to that. I wish I had an answer.
I would say get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think it is okay to challenge the status quo. I think it's okay to, not necessarily confrontational, but it's okay to have an uncomfortable conversation. Yeah. I'm not trying to educate you, school you, like, you know, make you this scholar in the subject matter, but I am willing to stand on what I know. I'm willing to stand on my experiences, and I'm willing to share those with people who don't agree with me. And I think when you do that, you also have the opportunity to get that message to people's ears otherwise wouldn't know you exist or wouldn't be willing to even have that dialogue and that exchange. Mm-hmm. So, and also I think you should post on platforms that you're also not comfortable with as well.
Yeah.
There are so many sites that don't conform to probably your thought process, and you can challenge them on their own platforms. Go to where they're at.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Hello, dear.
Hi, I'm Kenda. Okay, so I read this article once that I think it was like a Hollywood producer or executive or something, and this quote stands out in my mind where he said, "There are no more stories in Hollywood." Yeah. And I couldn't pass up the opportunity to ask you dope black creators what you would say to that producer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it may feel like it because they keep regurgitating the same stories
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't want to see the Wonder Years as, you know, with the black family in it. There's so much IP. There's so much original IP.
Yeah.
You could throw a rock and somebody has an idea for a new television show.
Yeah.
This is where the gatekeeping comes in.
Absolutely.
Because there's only so many people who control what actually is created.
Yeah.
I don't know if people have to die off, or I don't know what the answer is.
And some of our most successful content has been the stories we hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Mo was a huge hit on Netflix. We hadn't seen Palestinians in Houston before, and there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I was just gonna say it's literally what we've all been doing. Like, you're utilizing YouTube and you're putting your stories out on these free platforms, and the audience find you. Like, you're like, I really like this. This is important to me. And then there are hundreds of thousands of people that are like, this is important to me too. So I think that's what we've all been doing, and that's really how our audience find us, and also how we build community.
Go ahead.
Hey.
Hello.
Good morning.
My name is Holly Charles Pearson. I'm a writer and storyteller, so I really appreciated just learning all of these different perspectives from various forms of communication, so thank you.
You're welcome.
So I have a question. And I wanted to write it down so I didn't fumble it once I got here. You know how that happens. It's like a totally different question afterwards. But when gatekeepers and executives try to suppress or alter your vision, how do you push back in a way that still keeps you psychologically safe because you're at work?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, you talk about anxiety.
Yeah, I'm full of it. I'm riddled with anxiety now thanks to what I've chosen to do as a profession. I just try to keep in mind, like I said, the world and these characters that I created. I want to make decisions for them that I think would do them the least amount of harm, but also keeping in mind that unless I just create stuff for social media by myself, and which I've already said I hate it, social media, I have to keep in mind that I do have to compromise, but I can also say no, and then what's the worst that can happen? The worst is that it won't get made.
Yeah.
But to me, that's almost better than putting some shit out there
that you
will regret forever. So you just have to know when to hold them.
Know when to fold them.
And when to
fold them.
I think for me, when producing this documentary for Mumu Fresh, she has a vision of how she wants it to be. Yeah. And also as a person that has to edit and like see her vision, and we don't see it the same way sometimes, I think it's really important to have that come to Jesus. Like, have that, like, okay, this is what I'm thinking. What are you thinking? How do we meet in the middle? Because, you know, creating a documentary, it is literally just a stream of consciousness of, you know, their experiences. And we have to weave in a story that makes sense. So it's like all of these experiences, you can't get everything into one documentary, but what are the nuts and bolts of it? And so that's what I think about. Meat and potatoes is what we call it in radio. Like, just give people the meat and potatoes. So for me, it's like, okay, when I'm working on a project with someone, what's the meat and potatoes we want them to take away? And I think that's important when messaging. And you may agree or you may not agree, and there are creative differences, but again, you gotta find a happy median and that compromise to get to the end result.
If I could, just really quickly, I think it's important to have negotiables and non-negotiables, you know, that you're willing to whatever. And you know, to Manira's point, maybe the worst is that it won't get made, or the worst is that it won't get made yet. Because there are because if somebody saw value in what you're trying to create and then they ultimately didn't see the value, somebody else is going to see it. So you keep creating that content, and eventually somebody is going to figure out, like, nah, we need this out there.
Yeah. And we have, with our 4 minutes, I'd love to get your question, and maybe we can have whoever wants to field it with our 4 minutes left.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. I'm Skyla. I'm from the Met. I'm also very short, so this is a struggle.
You're working with the mic.
I guess my question for you guys is, when you guys are in the creative process or the pre-production process, how do you stop yourself from kind of getting stuck in that process and just kind of spinning your wheels?
Ooh, who wants to take that?
And how do you know when to press go? Yeah.
There are times where I'm creating content and I do feel stuck, and I'm like, do I go in the direction of telling the story about the Germans, or do I tell the story about the Japanese in this World War II piece? And so honestly, Occam's razor, do what's simple. Just go outside and take a walk. Go outside and take a walk. Get away from the content, because the more you try to force the worse it's going to get. It's like quicksand.
It's a part of the process. Right. Like, I don't know a single writer, producer, whoever that doesn't have a stuck moment. I would suggest an edible.
Right. Unplug your mind.
Maybe
some
sex. Right. I don't know. Do what works for you, but don't feel bad about being stuck.
And that it is just the process.
Means, you know, you don't get out of it.
So we have, with our 3 minutes, I want you all to speak to the young kid trying to get started in content. I want you to talk to the vet who's like switching up her life, going back to school to do her content. Right? What are your sort of two words that you're like, I wish I would have kept these in mind when I started, or I did keep these in mind?
Create with conviction, confidence, and fidelity.
Yeah.
I don't have just two words. I'm sorry. I just, right. I mean, I would say don't feel bad about being the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, the ass shaker, the back breaker, all the things that you have to do to get your work out. You may feel like, well, I should be getting to this quicker. No, you know, it's going to happen when it happens. Don't feel bad. Just keep going. Please do not dilute your voice, because literally that is the only thing that makes you special. That is the only thing that separates you from everybody else in this room. And I know it's cliche, but it's the truth. Yeah. Okay? So that would be my...
I think you have to find your why. Why is this important? Why are you creating this content? Why do you want people to know this information from you? I think once you know why you want to do what you do, it helps you to move and to, you know, really move in a way that you are confident and you feel good about the content. Like, I go to bed, I sleep so good because I know what I've put out. I'm very proud of it. I'm very steadfast in my conviction that this was amazing and this is important, and this is important to other people and not just myself. So I think that's important. And I want to create an experience. I want you to leave feeling like it was a vibe, like, oh, I want to be around more Nori. So I think that's important too. So it is about how you make people feel, and it's okay to challenge those feelings too.
Well,
Well, we are landing this plane on the dime. That is our time. I want to thank our audience for being here. Thank you all. This is really so enjoyable and seeing your faces. I want to thank our panelists for coming down to Austin.
Thank you.
And
thank
I want to thank Sanaa Laybourne for putting this all together. Who put this all together. This was her brainchild. Thank you, Sanaa, for bringing us all, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much to Manura Jones, Dominic Lawson, Nori Moss, and Dr. Saida Grundy for saying yes to sharing their voice with the South by Southwest audience. Oh, there was so much good information in their conversation. I definitely feel re-energized listening to their panel, and South by Southwest was such an amazing experience. I'm so glad that once again I'm able to take some phenomenal Memphians who are doing just amazing work and be able to put them on the stage in front of folks from around the globe. I mean, certainly so many Memphians have left their mark in a variety of different fields, and I just think it is such a great opportunity for people to see in real time the creatives and the creative ideas that are coming out of Memphis. You know, I love our city so much. And of course, as soon as I'm able to, I will share this year's panel conversation with you as well. Thanks so much for tuning in to Let's Grab Coffee. This is WYXR 91.7 FM. And don't forget to subscribe to Let's Grab Coffee in podcast format and on YouTube so you never miss a conversation. And then you can also re-listen, because there's always so many good gems that I know you have to go back to. I know that I do. I re-listen to these shows all the time. Thanks so much again for joining me, and I can't wait for us to spend some more time together next week.